What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by HappyTummy.ie, the exclusive distributor of BioGaia Probiotics. BioGaia Protectus Baby Drops with Vitamin D is an award-winning 2-in-1 probiotic baby supplement containing high-quality lactic acid bacterium Lactobacillus reuteri, which is clinically proven to reach the gut alive. Designed for babies, it comes in a convenient, squeezable tube for simple and precise dosage. These drops also contain vitamin D, essential for normal function of the immune system and the growth and development of bones in children. I recommend BioGaia probiotic drops to a lot of my babies that suffer from colic and reflux, as it is the most researched probiotic for infant colic in the world. Welcome to the Baby Tribe Podcast, your essential companion through the journey of parenting. I'm Professor Afif Al-Kafash, a neonatologist, pediatrician, researcher, and lactation consultant at the Rotunda Hospital Dublin and the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland.
And I'm Katie Mugan, a pediatric and public health nurse and a lactation consultant. Together, with over 40 years of experience in caring for infants and children, we're here to share expert insights, inspiring stories, and give you access to an amazing array of experts in parenting and the field of pediatrics.
Before we dive into today's topic, remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Your ratings and reviews help us reach more parents like you, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Now, let's get started with today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Baby Tribe Podcast. I am your co-host, Afif Al-Kafash.
And I'm Katie Mugan, your other co-host.
You know what I've realized, Katie, is that we rarely introduce ourselves at the start of each podcast episode.
Well, I'm blaming you, Afif, because you tell me what to do every time we turn up. So.
I know. So just to remind people, I'm sure they all know us by now, but it's nice for all our new listeners to say hello and who we are. And just to also say thank you so much for all your lovely feedback. But we'd love to remind you again to keep rating us, giving us a lovely review, and sharing us with people who may also find this beneficial to keep us in the charts and to increase our reach, because that's what it's all about, isn't it?
And we're not going to say we wouldn't love you all to subscribe to the Kafashians to hear those extra little snippets from Afif and his lovely wife, Anne.
Absolutely. And you know what? Me and Anne now have come to the stage where we do not chat to each other during the week at all because we have to save it for our conversation in the pod.
Tell me, do you have any arguments before you sit down?
It was so funny. We were actually chatting to say the other day that we had a big argument like about 2 hours before we were due to record. And she loves it because she knows that I must grovel and apologize before so that we can actually end up recording it. Because if I don't apologize, there'll be no Kafashians and the schedule will all be ruined. So she loves having fights now on Saturday morning, knowing that I'm going to have to grovel and apologize at the end of it.
Yeah. So she's got that little bit of extra control.
She's capitalizing on the Kafashians. Yeah, I know. It's pretty interesting because we also, as we mentioned in the Kafashians, if you're subscribed, that we just had our wedding anniversary. We're nearly 17 years married.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many years? Must have been only babies.
Got married when I was 29. She was 30.
She's... Oh, sorry. You're so much older than me. Yeah. Really messy.
I know.
No, we're 13 years married. We're 14 this year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I know.
So we got married when I was 30. 31.
There you go.
31.
We got married at the same stage in our lives.
Yes, same stage.
But I think that's when most people now get married, isn't it? Sometimes a little bit later even.
Oh, I'd say so. Like I married an old dude. Like Jim is 50 this year. Last year. He turned 50 in July last year.
Yeah.
See,
I can't say the same about marrying Anne because I get in trouble because she is a year older than me.
But a year is nothing. Like Jim's 8.
Eight
so
years.
We joke about when I made my communion, he was in secondary school.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds really bad, but when you put it as an older age, it's very different. We met when we were in our late 30s.
I can't use the same, because there is a week in a year that we are both the same age.
Do you celebrate together then?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I mean, went for the older woman. Interesting.
Yeah. So myself, Anne, and my eldest daughter, all our birthdays are within a week of each other.
No way. When's that?
Well, you missed it this year.
Well, okay, I promise next year. Well, you kept it kind of secretive, so I didn't know it was coming up. So I'm prepared for next year. I'm going to put it in my diary. It's going to notify me and I'm prepared. Do you know what I'm going to get you?
What?
I am definitely at some stage going to send you a card. It's going to explode when you open it. And it's going to be a glitter bomb.
Oh, don't. Not with the glitter again.
I just have to warn Anne in advance because I don't want her to give out about her house getting trashed.
Yeah, maybe you give it to me here in the recording studio so that it would explode.
I'd love to catch that on camera. But I've ruined it now because now you know it's going to happen. So
yeah, for those of you who don't know, I have a morbid fear of glitter. I cannot stand glitter.
How odd is that?
Yeah, so much so that, you know, whenever we decorate the house for Christmas, all the decorations must be glitter free. All the Christmas cards must be glitter free. I'm now worried that I'm going to get a slew of cards. Nobody knows where to send them. They'll send them to the Rotunda. The Rotunda can deal with all the glitter.
I just, you know, when you talk about that, just the Trolls comes into my mind. You know the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's like glitter nonstop.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind virtual glitter, but real glitter, I just cannot stand.
Guys, listen, next April. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Next April, send all your cards in.
Okay. Anyway. Today we have a really good interview. We are talking about baby massage and we had an amazing guest, Karen Prunty, who is a neonatal nurse that also started her own business where she provides a lot of services for new parents, and she's going to talk about all of that with a specific chat about the benefits of baby massage. But first, Katie, you in your practice, when you are dealing with a lot of parents, with your active social media presence, usually hear a lot of things that sort of irk you and grate on you a little bit in terms of, you know, recommendations for parents to do things. So I'm going to throw out a few at you and I'm going to see how you respond, because there's a lot of, I suppose, conflicting information and some
misinformation
and disinformation as well about things that parents should and shouldn't do in certain situations. And the one I was going to ask you about first is a gassy baby, where mums are advised to stop coffee, stop dairy, and also try formula if they're breastfeeding in a gassy baby.
Now, just to say that we have a fantastic episode way back at the very beginning on gassy babies. So we kind of really go through everything on that. But I am seeing so many, clients talk about, oh, well, I heard this on social media, or a friend told me to stop dairy. My baby's a little unsettled. And I suppose that's where parents need to understand the difference between normal newborn behavior versus an unsettled and gassy baby. We don't recommend ever taking dairy out of a mother's diet if she's breastfeeding because of a gassy baby, unless we have significant information that would actually, symptoms that would indicate that there is an intolerance there. And myself and Afif have discussed this in big detail. So no, I see so many mothers nearly killing themselves to take out dairy, and it's just so tough. I think that's where we see more parents then stopping breastfeeding because of that. Formula should never be introduced over breastfeeding because of a gassy baby. If anything, as I say from the very beginning, if your baby's significantly gassy, look at how you're feeding them, as in the flow, good attachment, latch, positioning, all that comes into play. Coffee. Did you mention coffee?
Yes, coffee.
Yeah, so coffee's a big one. To be honest, that is kind of very client specific. Most of us can have up to 300 micrograms of caffeine within a day. That's nearly 3 barista style coffees. Would you have 3 barista style coffees if you were feeding a newborn? Possibly not. You really have to look at how it affects the baby, if they're really jittery, unsettled after it. But I would have always had, like, I'm a coffee addict. I'll put my hands up and say I can't function without it. I would have definitely had 1, if not 2. And then I would have moved on to decaf or an alternative drink.
Perfect. Moving on to cleaning baby's ears with cotton earbuds.
Oh my God. Do you know what, Afif? I put this up on my social media recently and the amount of DMs I got going, oh my God, I was told to do this by healthcare professionals, by mothers-in-laws, by their own mothers, by sisters. I couldn't believe it, because, like, I mean, since I suppose, look, I'm in peds since, well over 20 years, and we were always told nothing less than your shoulder or your elbow should go into the ear. But there's loads of, even now you see on Temu and all these other sites, that like these ear cleaning products that are actually really small and can cause huge damage. So you can perforate an eardrum very easily with a cotton earbud. And we still see adults all the time clean their ears and then bang, perforation, and ends up to a lot of complications. Also, it impacts wax to the eardrum. So it actually is not helping. Wax will move out of the ear. And then if you get it around the edges, you can actually use a little baby wipe or something just to clean the edges. Or even if you were using cotton earbud, just around the edges, but never into the ear canal.
Yeah, so clean the wax once it comes out of the ear canal and sits on the outer part of the ear rather than shoving things in. Because as you said, you could cause not only perforation, but you could be pushing wax back in and end up compacting it at the end of the ear canal.
So even for adults, that's where you see your ear cleaning all the time. And as a GP's practice nurse, I would have done a lot of ear irrigations. So that's why I've been using cotton earbuds and pushing it all in there. You're actually doing a disservice to yourselves.
Another one I saw you giving about recently is routine feeding every 3 hours.
Now, guys, this is coming out still from hospitals and healthcare professionals and the community. Don't feed your baby only every 3 hours. Let them suck on your finger, use a soother, offer alternative methods of soothing. That is absolute bull baloney. I don't want to use bad language, but it just irks me so much when I see this, because it's really doing a disservice to the parents out there and the moms that are really struggling, and they know, looking at their infant, this baby looks hungry. Why am I going against every little gut feeling I have to feed them and stick to a 3-hourly regime? Also, if your baby isn't feeding, if your baby isn't gaining well, then your baby's not going to feed better by starving them to the 3-hour mark and then letting them have a really good feed. It doesn't work like that. How often a baby feeds is unique to the individual mother at hand. Some moms have a really big milk storage capacity. That simply means how much milk your breast can hold at any one time. For some moms, they will have a larger one. It means the baby might only feed 8 times in 24 hours, which is 3-hourly, and maybe take a big gap at some stage in the day. And that baby grows and thrives, versus the other mom who has a smaller milk storage capacity. That baby just has to feed a lot more frequent in 24 hours in order to get enough milk. Both babies grow and thrive. Both babies feed very differently. One baby can feed 16 times in 24 hours. The other baby feeds 8. Nothing wrong with either. There's no breastfeeding issue. 3-hourly rule, throw it out the window. It's not like a bottle fed infant.
And on the flip side, when I see a lot of parents at the 6-week check, they're telling me that they're still waking their baby overnight at the 3-hour mark to feed them when they're nice and soundly asleep, because they were told they still have to feed every 3 hours. So you can't actually let your baby sleep. They're not likely to sleep for much longer than 3 or 4 hours at that stage, but I wouldn't wake them up to feed them if everything otherwise is going well.
So when a baby hits birth weight at 2 weeks, often you're told don't bother waking them at all. You have to be still very careful that if your baby takes one longer stretch at a point, we'd expect that to be made up in other feeds. So suddenly, if we see these weight losses, it's generally down to babies just not feeding enough. It's not necessarily a breastfeeding issue.
And finally, giving your breastfeeding baby a bottle to help them sleep better.
If that was the case, guys, every baby that was bottle fed would be sleeping soundly with no sleep issues, no feeding issues. When I put out a post on my social media that says, you know, a baby will sleep longer with a bottle, the amount of bottle feeding parents go, well, why isn't mine sleeping? Exactly. It's not a cure. Not a cure, guys. If you choose and you want to give a bottle because you want to take one feed away because it works for you and your family, then once you're aware of how it impacts your supply and everything else, then you do that. There's nothing wrong with it, but just don't think it's the cure.
Absolutely. And if you're not following Katie on Instagram, please go and follow her at nursingmama.ie.
Now, you see, I have to give him one back, guys.
Yeah.
So if you're not following Afif, head on over to Instagram at Afif El Kafash.
Afif.elkafash. See, sorry, I know your handle off by heart.
Yeah, but like I would have presumed, why did you put the dot in there?
You have to.
Afif.elkafash.
I think maybe not. But I like to
separate. Who else has your name?
Because I'll tell you, some people think that my first name is Afifel.
Well, okay.
And my surname is Kafash. In fact, you know, with the electricity company, I am Efifel and then Kafash.
Okay.
So I have to separate the two just to let people know this is my first name and this is my surname. So
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well, that clarifies everything, guys. Now we know.
There you go.
Are you a frequent user of technology? Do you want to know more about how this stuff works? And do you sometimes think tech developments are pointless?
Well, you're not wrong.
Yep. And while some of it is scary and some of it's impressive, lots of tech is just tech for tech's sake.
Hey, that's the name of our podcast.
That's right. For Tech's Sake is a podcast featuring me, Elaine Burke.
And me, Jenny Darmody.
And as tech journalists, we've been writing about tech for a long time.
And now we're talking about the tech you use or hear about on the news.
And helping you understand what's going on.
We're not going to tell you that tech is going to fix your life.
And we're not going to tell you it will kill us all either.
We'll just help you peek under the hood and see for yourself the good parts, the bad parts, and everything in between.
And each episode will feature an expert to help us learn more.
So if you want to know what's the grok with AI,
or how your data can be used and abused, or how to have a healthier relationship with technology, then tune in every fortnight for new episodes from us. For Tech's Sake is a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Head Stuff Podcast Network. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
So Katie, let's pause for a moment to remind our listeners that Baby Tribe is now part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, and we are now in a position to offer our listeners bonus content via Head Stuff Plus.
That's right, Afif. Our spin-off series, Keeping Up with the Kafashians, hosted by you and your lovely wife, Anne Doherty, treats our listeners to the fabulous husband and wife discussions, an expansion of points raised here on the Baby Tribe, and some science as well.
So please subscribe for as little as €5 per month and make sure to select Baby Tribe and Keeping Up with the Kafashians as your podcast to support. Subscribing will give you access to all the bonus content on Head Stuff Plus. And guys, Katie's weekly appearance fees are getting a bit much for me, so we'd really value your support.
I wish, everyone. Afif's skincare routine is ridiculous. You should see the potions and lotions he uses every single day.
Listen, it takes a lot to look this good. Thank you to everyone who have subscribed so far. And if you haven't subscribed yet, why the hell not? Anyway, guys, you keep asking for a nerdy segment, and we have decided that over the last little while, we're going to try and do as much nerdy segments as we can. And we're going to try and leave them quite linked to the guest and the topic. And the one that I came across, which is actually a lovely Irish conducted study that was done not too long ago, is to do with baby massage.
This is brilliant. I actually love the results of this one.
Yeah. So, you know, people sometimes may think that I'm skeptical about non-medical interventions with parents. Look at Katie's face. And that is actually, you know, not true. I do sometimes, you know, report that there is no evidence to one practice or another, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I don't think that they're a good idea to try. However, I always thought that baby massage, and the reason I love baby massage is because it's actually parent-led. The parents administer it, not some healthcare provider that you interact with, you know, occasionally. But this is something that you can empower the parents with the tools, and that they can administer it at home. And it has a lot of benefits. We know that it has huge benefits for preterm infants. However, the benefits for term infants are less clear. Now, that doesn't mean that there is no benefits, but we are gathering more and more evidence showing that it may actually be of benefit. Well, this group in Cork from the infant group actually randomized babies to receive regular massage by parents from 2 weeks up to 4 months. And then the other group was just normal control baby care. So at 2 weeks, they had an interaction with a physiotherapist that gave them the tools and the techniques. And they had to do it 3 times a day, as much as they could, for a 4 month period. And they followed these babies up to 4 months of age. And they actually then looked at the electrical brain activity of the two groups at 4 months of age. They also looked at sleep patterns at 4 months of age and baby outcomes, neurodevelopmental outcomes at 18 months of age. So just to let you from the outset, they showed no difference in sleep between the massage group and the normal group or the control group at 4 months. And they showed no difference in baby outcomes at 18 months. Does that mean that baby massage is no good? Absolutely not. The numbers were small. I think the numbers were too small to show big differences in those two outcomes. However, what they did show were distinct differences in the electrical brain activity at 4 months of age between babies that have received regular massage from their parents and babies that did not. And I found that absolutely fascinating. I'm not going to bore you with the details of the actual character of what the ECG changes were or the electrical brain activities were, mainly because I don't understand them myself. But anyway.
At least you're honest.
Okay, let me read them out just to show you what I mean. So the study found that routine massage was associated with distinct functional brain changes, including higher sleep spindle spectral power, greater EEG magnitudes, and lower interhemispheric coherence. Do you know what that means?
Absolutely not.
Well, I looked into what that means. And what it means is actually really, really interesting. In a nutshell, it actually indicates faster brain maturation in the babies that received baby massage. And what does that mean? It means that we know that the baby's brains are going through a rapid phase of development and maturation over the first 2 years of age. And what happens is the connections between parts of the brain that need to talk to each other become reinforced, and loose connections that aren't necessary begin to be sort of written down and suppressed. So you improve the wiring of the brain between areas that need it, and you improve the maturation of the brain. Baby massage tends to speed up that process.
Interesting.
Which is really, really interesting, because we actually know that maternal interaction and parental interaction with their baby can help enhance those changes. So much so that we know that maternal care can actually increase epigenetic modulation. So what does that mean? We all have genes, Katie. We all have DNA that determines a lot of our functional processes. But how those genes are expressed, meaning that how the genes are turned on, switched on versus switched off, can actually be affected by maternal touch to the baby. And we know that maternal touch and interaction between mom and baby in a physical as well as vocal can actually help switch on the good parts of the gene and switch off the bad parts of the gene that may promote disease states down the line.
That's pretty cool.
Which I find is really, really powerful, especially when, and we've talked about this before, a lot of the time the mom-baby relationship is almost exclusively determined by feeding, right? In the media and things like that.
Oh, I was going to say, where are we going with this?
Yeah.
Yes, I do get what you're saying.
You know, like if you haven't breastfed, you didn't do well. And if you breastfed, you did amazing. Well, here's an example of how mothers are empowered by the ability to interact with their baby, irrespective of feeding method, to try and improve baby's outcomes. Maternal touch and baby massage is one powerful tool that mothers and parents can actually achieve that by.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really nice message to send out.
I think it's a really nice connection anyway. For any mom, it relaxes the baby so much.
Yeah.
By doing it.
Yeah, but it also has definite
other
changes.
Benefits, yes.
Yeah, definite changes on the brain. And we know that it reduces stress hormones and increases serotonin as well. And that can only have good beneficial impact down the line. So there you go.
So Afif, I cannot wait to hear your conversation now with Karen. So take it away.
Karen, thank you so much for joining us on the Baby Tribe podcast. Really, really happy that you are here with us. So to start, can you tell us a little bit about your journey into becoming a pediatric and neonatal nurse and what sparked your passion into this field?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm absolutely delighted to be on the Baby Tribe. I have been watching you grow and when it started, so it's an absolute pleasure to be here. So thank you for having me. I have always, from a really young age, been baby mad. Absolutely, like, begged my parents for more baby brothers and sisters. I would have had one of those baby born dolls that you could feed and then they had a little potty and you could change their nappy. So from a really, really young age, I was definitely drawn to very small children and babies, and was one of those kids kind of in the junior infant yard going up to the kids that were upset. So it was kind of no surprise that I did end up being a pediatric nurse. At first, I did my Gen 1 nursing. So when I was training, you had to do Gen 1 nursing first before you could go on and do your pediatric training. Nursing has slightly changed now. You can actually do pediatric and Gen 1 together. So I did my Gen 1 nursing first, and then I took a break for a while. I actually did property in Portugal and everything. So I had a little taste of something else outside of medicine and nursing. And then when I came back, my daughter was 2 at the time. And I was like, now is the time to go back and do my pediatric nursing. So I went back when she was 2. I was actually a single mom at the time. So it was a lot of work. It was really hard because you have to work full time as a nurse. And then you do your training and you have to do your higher diploma with lots of assignments. And I went back. That was a year. And then my first placement as a student nurse, higher diploma nurse, was on a baby ward. And my first day, I went down to the bathroom and I cried because I was like, there were some babies who were 6-7 months old who had never been home, and that just absolutely broke my heart. So I started my first day on a baby ward crying in the toilet. And then when I qualified, I went back and staffed on that ward. I absolutely loved it. So I kind of knew when I was training to be a pediatric nurse that babies and neonates was the specialty that I wanted to go into. As much as I love the bigger children and the toddlers, there's just something really, really special about babies and being in that relationship with parents and being there in the beginning and kind of following them on. And I think my own daughter, my first baby, was actually in the NICU for a few days. I suppose a bit of empathy and insight to what it's like when you have a baby in an incubator and there's a barrier there and you don't have that immediate kind of physical connection that you think that you will have. So I always go back to my time as a mum sitting at that bedside as well.
So yeah, you've robbed my second question actually, which is great. So because you are a mum of four and you're a neonatal nurse now, I think you're the first neonatal person to have on the Baby Tribe, which is fantastic because I'm a neonatologist myself. So how has your personal experience shaped your professional practice? And by that I mean, being a mum of four, does that inform how you deal with parents?
100%, it absolutely does shape how I practice in neonatology as a neonatal nurse. Being a parent, also being a mum who was at the bedside of a sick baby, I always reflect on the times that she was in that incubator and in the NICU, and not being able to hold her and not being able to feed her and not being able to do the things that are so natural to a new parent, like changing a nappy, feeding them. Like, they're the most natural things that we do as parents. And when you have a sick new baby, you can't do those things. And as much as we try and encourage them at the bedside, sometimes babies are too unstable that, you know, we can encourage a hand hug. I am all about babies hearing their parents' voice. So reading a book at the bedside, reading to them, touch. So like touching their head, touching their hands, even stuff like warming their hands over the baby's tummy. All of those things can absolutely help. But it's bridging that gap between how do I feel like a parent to this baby and how we can bridge the gap to them not feeling like the parent of that baby. Because one time I heard a parent say, I didn't feel like a parent of my baby until I held them, and they were 3 weeks already in the hospital. And like that, to me, I was like, we're not doing everything right as we should be. And when my baby was born, I didn't get to, I think I saw her, she came on to me for like 30 seconds, and then she was taken away. Thankfully at the time I wasn't a pediatric nurse, I wasn't working in neonates, so I didn't actually realize at the time kind of everyone that was in the room and the seriousness of what was going on. And then she was taken away up to the NICU. So that not being able to hold her, and when you have this vision in your head of what your journey is going to be like, you have this baby, I'm going to hold them, it's going to be beautiful. And when you're robbed of that, it can be really hard. Thankfully, a lot of the time, things are diagnosed antenatally. So we will meet the families, we'll show them the hospital, we'll show them some of the rooms that they may be going to, so that we can start that relationship, that rapport, that communication piece, start preparing them in some way that it's a little bit familiar for when their baby does come over from the maternity hospital. Because we get babies from all over Ireland, because it's very specialised, particularly like surgical babies. So they might be from like Donegal, Kerry. So it's a long journey for those babies to travel. If we know antenatally, they're often delivered up in Dublin, so that it's a short transfer over. But often the mum is still in the hospital, and that's really, really sad and really difficult for them. So what we try to do is we'll ring them. We have like video secure messaging system that we use, but it's understanding. And really, I know exactly what it's like. I have that empathy and that compassion. And I always say, if in my head, this mother would like to know this, or this father would like to know this, this parent, you know, if I give them a call, if we can get the secure video or the photo over, so they can actually physically see their baby. And then we are with them throughout their whole journey. So they come over, very much encouraging them to be part of the care, whether it's like what I was saying, hand-holding, reading a book, we have bonding squares, changing a nappy, being part, feeling that they're part of the team, that they're in partnership with us, and really kind of introducing that family integrated care. We probably don't always get it right. We try really, really hard. And then there's often families who maybe have other children who can't be there all the time. So that can also be difficult for those families as well. But I think it's definitely having the empathy and the compassion, and always in the back of your head going, if this was my baby, what would matter to me and what's important to me?
I remember being struck when I first got into neonatology a long time ago, that the parents were asking us permission to hold their baby's hand, to touch their baby, to interact with their baby, rather than it being the other way around, where we actually have to ask parents for permission to manage their baby. And that is changing slowly, but I think we really need to change that mindset, because the parents are the primary care providers for their babies, and it should be us asking for permission, not the other way around.
Absolutely. I think that's such a good point. And often, and we do hear all the time, oh, I'd love to hold them today, can I hold them today? And one thing that breaks my heart is sometimes the baby does become really unstable, and that parent's been waiting to hold them, and that's what gets them through, is holding them, whether it's half an hour, but sometimes the baby might deteriorate and we can't do that. And like, I find that really hard, because they're so disappointed.
Yeah.
I think it's every day going in and saying, what would you like to do today? Will we make a plan today? Baby's doing really well. Will we try and get them out? try and get them into the arms, or even if it's involving in like a feeding. And they can be involved in NG feeding and nappy changing, and if we're giving them like a small little top to tail, little wash if we can. But it's involving them, and it's absolute. I think you're so right there in that they're asking us for permission, and it's their little baby, and it's the most natural thing that they should be able to hold them and touch them. I think we're definitely getting better. I think we know a lot more about the benefits, not only to the parents, but also to the babies. And like, they do so much better when there is parental contact and involvement, and also shorter hospital stay, less readmission. And also it helps with the workload, because if you have a parent at the bedside who's able to help with a lot of those little tasks that we do, then it makes our job a little bit easier as well. And in partnership, you know.
You have a great philosophy, and you state that when a baby is born, so too is a parent. So can you expand on that in the context of what you've just told me?
When we have a baby, it changes us. So we're completely different. And I think a lot of people don't expect that. A lot of people weren't prepared for that either. And we're taking on this whole new role. And even though something we've always wanted, like from such a young age, I was like, couldn't wait to have a baby. And I always knew I actually always had four in my mind. I'm a stepmom as well, so we actually have five between us. But every time I had a baby, it shaped me and it molded me. It also broke me down. And then I had to kind of rebuild myself again, especially on my first baby, because I became a single mom. I didn't have any friends who had children. I was 25 at the time. So none of my friends, they were all living their best lives off traveling the world. So I remember the kind of the really loneliness, and I mean, I had my sister, my mum, they were amazing. But definitely reflecting on that really made me braver, more resilient, going through all of the things I went with her. And I feel we're very bonded. It was kind of like me and her against the world. But I definitely feel when I had her, I realized what love was. I realized what my priorities in life were. And like, I was younger compared to a lot of people and a lot of my friends who have children. And everyone's journey is different. So some people say, I found myself in parenthood. Some people say, I'm completely lost. And then you will find yourself again. And I think in the context of like babies in hospital, I think it can be really hard for particularly those parents, because there is a gap in kind of building that relationship and that bonding and attachment. I think that that's something that we really need to improve, so that they can kind of start that journey. Like matrescence, and there's patrescence as well. So matrescence is a term we're hearing loads about now, which is fantastic. So what I went through 14 years ago was matrescence, but I didn't know what it was at the time. I kind of thought I was losing my mind a little bit. And reflecting on it, I probably did have a little bit of like postnatal anxiety, particularly with a NICU baby, bit of birth trauma there as well. I'm much braver now to be able to talk about it, but for years I couldn't go there. Couldn't talk about it, couldn't go back to the hospital, like never wanted to go there again. But I did go back and had my second baby there, and it was really, really healing actually. But I think matrescence is the physical, the psychological, the emotional transition that we go through when we become parents. And I think it's understanding that. And there's patrescence as well. So we know that fathers also go through that as well. So I think it's understanding what we are actually going through and the changes that we go through. And it's knowing that it actually has a term on it, and that we're not alone in that as well. And everybody's journey is different. I think it's respecting everyone's journey. So some people will say, oh, I love every single moment and I love every single aspect. That's amazing. And then some people have a little bit more struggle. And I think it's actually opening up that conversation and respecting everyone's journey and having compassion for each other.
So I think you have brought all of this philosophy and knowledge into your maybe sixth baby or sixth child, little Rue. And I think that's how our paths crossed, is we met at a pregnancy and baby fair. And I was really intrigued about your business that you have started that is aimed to support new parents. The thing I want to focus on is baby massage and its benefits and what parents should know about it. But just before that, tell us a little bit about little Rue.
Yeah, so little Rue is my fifth, sixth baby. Little Rue, so baby massage, I trained in baby massage because I am a neonatal nurse, and I know that it would help my skill set in work and helping families. So then when I was on maternity leave with my last baby, I was like, oh, I'll do a few baby massage classes in the community. It'll help tide over a bit of that unpaid leave. There's 16 weeks where you have no income coming in. And obviously I have four children. So I needed to kind of take as much time off as possible, because we know how difficult it is to get childminding. So I started with one class in the community. And listening and sitting in space with parents, it just grew. It grew. I added another class, and then I was doing three classes. And then I had this from listening to parents. They asked me loads of questions because they think they kind of go, oh, you're a children's nurse, you're a baby nurse. You know this. I know lots of things, but I'm not an expert in everything. And I wouldn't claim to be either. I know my strong points. I know where my knowledge is. So I don't know a huge amount. You know, there's holistic sleep coaches. There is clinical psychologists. There is lactation consultants. There's weaning experts. So I know loads, but I love working with other people and I love being part of a team as well. So I started then getting people to come in and do little talks while we were in class. And then from listening to parents, it was like, God, wouldn't it be great if you could get them before they had their babies so that you could kind of give some education, some sort of preparation? I will never say that you'll be fully prepared by any class before you're pregnant, because bringing a baby home is completely different. And you have this idea in your head, it's completely different to what your reality is, really. And then, so for about a year, I had this dream of like setting up my own space, a dedicated space to pregnancy, postpartum, babies, toddlers, development, creating a village. So we often hear the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child. And I wanted to create that village. I wanted to have it all under one roof, because what I found is that parents were going here for advice. They were going somewhere else. They might go to like two or three people who also specialize in the same area, and they were all saying conflicting things. So what I kind of say is, we have a lactation consultant here. She's really good. I kind of stand over. Come to her. And the village is there. So you come in, you'll get your community of fellow parents, your support, your education, the chats, the laughs, the cries. So the village is there. So I had the dream, finally found a space, because a lot of people didn't want what they didn't really understand what I was trying to do. And then I took the leap. So I'm actually 1 year, 17th of April, the doors opened in Little Roo Studio. And it was created from holding space with parents and all the stuff that they were telling me that they were lacking, that they needed. And for me, I personally think this should be for everybody. I think that it should be, you know, in every county, it should be, you know, all over Ireland, this support system, that network and that community of parents, like somewhere that you can go and you're getting good pregnancy information, postpartum support, like your stuff like pelvic floors, education. So yeah, we do a little bit of everything all under one roof.
So then tell us about baby massage.
So baby massage is nurturing touch. So it's all about bringing that gorgeous, positive touch to your baby. I'm trained with the International Association of Infant Massage, so it's a certified body, and it's a mix of Swedish and Indian massage. And it's all about, you know, we know that touch is the first sense to develop in utero. So about 16 weeks, your baby, that's their first and their strongest sense. So when your baby comes out, first thing they want to do is be on us and be close to us and be connected. And we know that WHO are now promoting that, saying that premature babies that are born, that initial first contact can really help them survive and the mortality rate. So it's great that they are kind of supporting that knowledge as well around the touch and the parental contact. So it's nurturing touch, all about bringing in that loving connection. So babies, it's a form of communication. So it's a form of actually telling your baby you love them, because babies, they can't speak. So when a baby cries, what do? We pick them up. We know they know that they're loved. They know that there's somebody there to make them feel safe and secure. And we know that babies are one of them. They're most vulnerable in the whole world of newborns, because they're so reliant on their parent. And like, not that we are animals, but if you look at like the animal kingdom, most babies are up and walking the first day and they can go over and get their feed. Our babies can't do that. So they're the most vulnerable. And also their brain development hasn't caught up with the society that we live in now, that, you know, we're not kind of living outside as much as we would have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So it's bringing in that security, that love. And there was actually one of the saddest things that I have ever heard was somebody who was working in an orphanage. And they said the saddest thing was the sound of silence, because those babies just stopped crying because nobody was meeting their needs. They might have been fed and changed and, you know, all of those physical needs were met, but their emotional, their psychological needs, that's your touch, that's your security, and that's your love. And we know that introducing that the first 1,001 days of a child's life are so important for building those foundations for healthy attachment, healthy mental health, in later life as well. So what we're doing now to our babies is so important for building their development, their cognitive development, their sensory development, their coordination, their sensory system, giving them body awareness as well. And there's an anthropologist, Dr. Montague, has said that physical touch is, we need it to survive. We need it to survive. So we need to like physically connect with our babies through that lovely positive touch. And not only will they survive, but they'll thrive on that as well.
What I love about this concept is breastfeeding almost defines the relationship between a mother and a baby, and almost everything else is disregarded. And we know that a huge proportion of mothers do not breastfeed either by choice or, you know, by other circumstances. What I love about baby massage is that it's a way of bonding with your baby and fostering that attachment. That the attachment is not just defined by a breastfeeding relationship.
Yeah.
It's the mother and baby bond that is really unbreakable, irrespective of the feeding method. So can you tell us a little bit more? And we'll talk about, I suppose, health benefits for the baby as well. But what about the mother? What benefits does baby massage bring to the mother? And to emphasize, and something I actually didn't realize before I looked into it, is that it is the parents that administer the baby massage. You don't bring your baby to a therapist to do baby massage. You learn the tools yourself. So what you're doing in your classes is that you are giving the parents the empowerment and the tools to be able to do this.
Yeah, exactly. So I massage on a doll. So I don't massage anybody's baby, because if I was to massage their baby, I'm taking that experience away from them. And babies can smell their parents. So they know when they're close by. So for me to do that, I'm unfamiliar to them. So they wouldn't be as comfortable or as relaxed. So it's so important. That's such a good point. I'm really glad you brought it up. That we teach and we show the parents. So we demonstrate and they do it to their baby. They're learning that skill. So the benefits for the mum in terms of bonding and attachment, you know, the lovely hormone oxytocin is released. So when we touch our babies, when we're physically connecting with our babies, we get a beautiful surge of that. It also has shown to help with mental health as well. So postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, that physical connection with our baby, that touch can really, really help improve that as well. Parental confidence. Touching your baby, knowing that you can handle them, and particularly in the hospital setting when it's a sick baby. So introducing some of that positive touch, we can do adapted massage in the hospital. So particularly giving the parents that confidence of touching their baby.
I have been somewhat of a skeptic about the benefits of baby massage on babies in terms of, you know, helping with some health conditions. We hear about colic, reflux, fussiness, on all of these things. But I have to say, I have, after looking into the literature and chatting to you, not today, but previously, I'm really coming around to the fact that baby massage should actually be part of the approach to managing a fussy baby before we jump into medication. So tell us about some of the health benefits for the baby.
Yeah, and what I love about you, Afif, is you always do your research. So what I love about watching you is you're like, I researched, here's a paper and here's the links. Because what have we got if we don't have research? So there is some research in hospital settings and in NICUs where they've done infant massage and baby massage. And as well as helping, so with colic, we know there's no cure. So what we can help is manage some of those symptoms. And a tummy massage can help with that as well. It can help with wind. And it's, you know, sometimes you'll see a baby and they're straining, their face is going red. They might be trying for about 30 minutes to pass the stool because they don't like the sensation. And we know their gut is immature up until they're about 6 months of age. So a lovely tummy massage, like if I was to kind of teach any massage, foot I love, and the tummy, there are so many benefits to tummy massage. And with tummy massage, if you're really trying to help with colic, you have to do it about 3 times a day for about 2 weeks. The research has shown is then you will notice the difference. So you have to kind of stick with it, give it a chance. It does really help. I mean, the amount of punamis I have after class, I might get messages, happens during class when we're doing a tummy massage. But also with colic and with a kind of fussy baby, they're also feeling that security with their parent because they're getting that lovely touch. And also helps calm them down. So it's very calming for them as well.
Yeah. You've touched on a very important point in that it takes about 2 weeks for the effect of that therapy to come through. And what I despair at sometimes is there are some people that offer a quick fix for a colicky baby. And often then, I think it may give parents false expectations and it may make things worse down the line. So what are your views on those quick fixes?
That's why I'm like, I love when I meet parents and I can tell them this will work and this won't work. Because I have a lot of contacts I know from working in a hospital, and as amazing as holistic approach is, some things, sadly, some people are out as a business side and kind of want to take people's money. So that makes me feel quite sad. So I always really like when I'm asked about certain things and I can say, this is a good avenue to go down. This is recommended. I know that this works for some people. This hasn't worked. I personally have used this myself for some situations, so I can give some of that advice and experience. And what I would always say to parents is, you know, if someone is kind of trying to sell you something or getting you in, or, you know, do your research. So ask around, read up about it, kind of have some of that knowledge as well. Because sometimes one person says, oh, I did this and it worked amazing. May have been coincidence, you know, may have been the timeline. Baby might have been coming through, because we kind of know with colic, they do outgrow it eventually. So maybe around the timeline. Also developmentally, things are happening all the time with babies and their brain, so that can also affect some of the fussiness. Some of their sleep is impacted. Sometimes they want to be held a lot more. So it's just actually the baby, as opposed to there's a problem, if that makes sense. I think we're really quick to put an identity or a term onto the baby, but actually all babies are different. And I think it's sometimes just the baby and it's their little personality. So have you ever heard the term babies are like dandelion and orchids? Yeah. So some babies are like orchids, where they want to be on us all the time. They need a bit more attention. I had two of those, like had to end up co-sleeping on me all of the time. And then two were happy in the co-sleeper, great sleepers, you know, were kind of, so the dandelion, it's the idea that they don't need, you know, they're kind of happy to be like, not that they're left, but kind of, you know, chilling in their little bouncer or in their little co-sleeper. So like that idea of the dandelion kind of thrives in the wild. And then the orchid is the baby that kind of wants to be on us all the time. And I think that is something that a lot of parents don't hear. And I hear a lot of it in class. So we do a little icebreaker. So I kind of do a mother circle at the beginning of every class. And one of the icebreakers is, what was the thing you weren't expecting when you became a parent? A lot of the time what comes up is, I wasn't expecting them to want to be on me all of the time. I think we need to kind of let parents know that babies are seeking connection. And in some cultures, they're wrapped to their babies for the first couple of years of life. So I think it's embracing that as well.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I have three practical questions to ask you about baby massage. The first one is, are there specific areas that you touch and massage? Number two, are there specific lotions that you use or oils or anything like that? Or is it just touch? And number three, is there a particular time of the day?
Yeah, great questions. So we massage everywhere. And with massage, we build it. So we want to keep it calm. We don't want to do a whole body week one. So each week we build on it. So week one, we start with the legs because they're the most used to being touched because of the nappy changes. So we do legs and feet, and babies love it. And you know, feet are so sensory. There's like so many neurons going up to the brain. Keep the socks off, please, everybody. Socks off at home. Let their feet feel different textures. Lovely sensory brain development, cognitive role in that. So a lovely foot massage. We do that week one. Then week two, we do a lovely tummy massage. Then week three, we do arms. Then week four, we do face and back. And then week five, we do a whole body massage. So it's introducing the massage strokes, building it up slowly, because we don't want to overwhelm our babies. You know, their brains like sponges, and when babies get overstimulated, you might have a fussy baby that evening. So we want to avoid that. So we keep the room nice and calm, not too many lights or noise or anything like that. And it's that communication piece where the parent is really looking at their baby, really taking in their baby. Because, you know, you might have a really busy day. You might be like rushing to get to class. You might be like have an appointment after class. But are you like soaking in your baby? Because I have four babies, and I know there's days where I was like, oh my God, I've done everything. I fed, I've changed them, looked after all their needs. But have I really like looked at them today? And have I, you know, really absorbed them and taken them in? So I think that's your time out, and that's your time to do it. And then we'd encourage then every day doing a little bit of that massage, and that you're building it, and it just becomes part of your natural routine. A lot of the strokes that we teach parents are kind of doing naturally anyway. They're doing a lot of that touch anyway. And then regards to the oils, so we use organic edible oil. So you think like an organic sunflower oil, organic coconut oil, so that it, if any goes on their hands and they lick their hands, that it's safe. And what I would say is, if you're doing it in the summertime or warm weather, making sure that you remove that oil before you're bringing your baby outside. Obviously, you're going to have them in the shade anyway, but just, I think that's an important point to make. And then when is a good time? So a good time to do it is when they're in a quiet, alert state. So when, you know, they're not too tired, they're not hungry about 30 minutes after a feed, and that you're going to enjoy it. So you're not rushing it. You don't feel stressed, or you're like, I'm going to do 20 minutes massage now, and you're trying to squeeze it in. Pick a time when you're both have been able to kind of calmly do it and it's an enjoyable experience. And we always ask for consent with our babies as well. That might sound a little bit woohoo, but it is about bringing in the idea of we are asking for consent. We're having babies part of that communication, and we're introducing that into the rest of their lives as well. And there's things we do with communication with our babies anyway. You might go, oh, will I change your nappy now? Oh, we go, what outfit will we wear today? So we're involving them in that communication.
You're actually right. Anyway. When you first said that, I said, that's cracked. But actually, we do that all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just, you know. Yeah.
It's actually emphasizing it.
Yes.
And you're doing it. And yeah. It's actually really important.
Yeah.
It's really important building that communication.
That's a very, very good point. Yeah. So are there any misconceptions with massage that you encounter that parents may misunderstand what baby massage is? So, for example, there are no manipulations of movement or anything like that, and no manipulations of the head and neck and things like that. That's mm-hmm. different.
Yeah.
So are there any other misconceptions?
Like what you touched on earlier is that people think that I massage their baby. If your baby has special needs or they have medical conditions that they can't massage the baby, absolutely can. And especially in, you know, like trisomy 21, children with cerebral palsy, any of those conditions, it really helps relax out their muscles when they might have like hypertonia as well, where they're trying it hard. Their muscles aren't as relaxed and their tone is a bit tighter as well. So really like beautiful benefits to them as well. The only time when and that their baby is too big, that you can start massage anytime. Like when I learned about massage 3 years ago, my little boy was 2.5 and my other boy was 5. They loved it. And then they'd massage their little teddies. So the idea that it has to be baby, even though the term is baby massage, never too late to start massaging your baby. In terms of coming to a class though, to learn baby massage, they have to be kind of pre-crawling, because otherwise they won't stay on the mat. And then you'll just end up chasing your baby throughout the class.
For parents that you have now convinced that baby massage is an essential part of their routine care and their development, what's the best resources, classes that they should join other than Little Roo?
Other than Little Roo, so if you're not in the South Dublin Black Rock area, there are so many around. There's actually Baby Massage Ireland has a website, and all of the instructors are listed on there with their locations as well. Like, send me a DM. I have a huge network of other people, of instructors around the country that I have connected with. And we all support each other. And like what Baby Massage Ireland, what Baby Massage does, and that lovely connection that we all have, is like, it's really, really beautiful bringing that. And really what I would say about baby massage is you're going to a baby massage class, but really what you're also going to, it's a kind of a class for mothers as well. I also do dads too. So it's for all parents. So I do. My main 6 week one is for mums, but we do some specials with dads, so they're also involved. But it's really, you know, my class is 90 minutes. So we do a little introduction at the start. We do baby massage. There's tea, coffee, treats. So you're also having the chats, and it's getting that kind of peer to peer support as well. So baby massage, amazing class, but it's also like a mother's group. But please don't be put off by that term, mother's group, because it's actually really, really nice, as opposed to, I know people think mother's group, we're all like, you know, going to be breastfeeding, singing kumbaya. But when you become a mum, it's really nice to make those connections with other mothers. And to
and it's a diverse group. So you're not coming to a breastfeeding group or a formula feeding group. It's
yes.
Everything.
Oh, absolutely. And like, that's one thing. I'm really glad you touched on that, actually, because that's one thing that there's so many groups for parents around the country, and I think that group should be open to all, whatever way you feed
and
your baby.
The groups tend to be defined by the type of feed that you give your baby, which I don't like.
I'm an advocate for all ways of feeding, and I have witnessed some mums who have tried and failed, some mums who just don't want to, and that's their choice. And I think we need to respect everybody. And then there's also like people's supply doesn't come in, or they can't meet the supply for their growing baby, and there can be feeding. And I think just respecting everybody's choice. I'm really glad we touched on that, because I think groups should be for absolutely everybody as well.
And before I ask you the final question, what's your Instagram handle? We're going to stick that in the show notes as well.
Thank you. It is @little_rue_village.
Yeah, and we'll have that in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
So finally, looking ahead, how do you see the role of baby massage evolving in neonatal care and parent support?
Oh, I'm actually really excited about it becoming part of our neonatal care and hospital. I think that it's going to be integrated into family care, integrated into like our holistic approach to our neonatology. So I'm really excited that I did it 3 years ago. So I have loads of experience now and loads of that knowledge that I can bring that. I'm bringing that into the hospital because the research shows. So in the UK, Australia, there's loads of lovely research out there for babies who are massaged in hospital. And it shows that they have... helps brain development, helps with weight gain, helps they may sleep a little bit longer as well. Parental confidence, parental involvement, parental mental health, the bonding, attachment, absolutely huge. That increase, that surge of oxytocin, it also helps regulate their temperature, regulate their breathing, regulate their heart rate. So that parental contact, that parental touch really has huge medical benefits for our baby, as well as protecting their neurodevelopmental as well, which is what we really need to do to our babies in hospital, because often touch is associated with pain in hospital. If you think of all the tests that they get done, so that we really need to promote positive touch. So when we're doing something, a necessary test and procedure that may be painful to our babies, that we have the parent, that we're involving the parents in that, that they're also being at the bedside, comforting the baby if possible. And that we're also then promoting loads of positive touch to balance out that. So babies don't think every time I'm touched, something bad is going to happen, that we're making it really benefit and really positive for the baby as well.
Yeah, that's a lovely message to end on, because if you look at the market, there are so many products that are advertised that really pry on the vulnerability of parents to say that you've missed out on this, so here's a product to help you with that. For example, the new formula types that are coming out that are designed for C-section moms, you know, okay, that are actually there to say, oh, your baby missed out on vital probiotics or prebiotics because you had a C-section. Here's a product that will help where you failed. Or things that you stick up your baby's bum to try and improve colic and things like that. So what I love about baby massage is that it puts the power back into the parent's hand, into doing something positive for their baby and fostering bonding and fostering nurturing. So Karen, thank you so much for coming on the Baby Tribe podcast. We really, really enjoyed having you, and I'm sure a lot of parents have found this extremely useful.
Thank you so much. I loved being here. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Baby Tribe podcast. We're delighted to have shared this time with you, offering guidance and support for your parenting journey.
I've been Afif, and she's been Katie, and together we've been your guides in exploring the multifaceted world of parenting. Remember, every step you take in nurturing your child makes a world of difference.
Stay connected with us and don't miss our next episode, where we'll continue to delve into the valuable insights and practical tips for raising healthy and happy children. Thank you for being part of our tribe, and remember, you're doing an amazing job.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.